Okay, before I start episode 99, yes, this is 99. Just want to remind you, episode 100 is Chris Green, and he is making an announcement. I still don't know what it is. I have no clue. But I'm excited because I think Chris, we can all relate to what Chris has done for us and the help that he's given us. It's time to give back. So I'm excited to have him. Remember, episode 100 is coming up.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 99, Jason Clark. Yes, 99. Finally there. And, you know, I'm excited because Jason is a real solid seller, and I think there's just so much valuable information, but I love his story, how he got to where he was. He's been selling for 21 years, e-commerce. Think about that, 21 years, and how he's been drawn back to it because it's a better fit for his life, and I think there's value in that. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and I'm blown away to say this is episode 99. I got a nice note from somebody today, and he's like, I can't believe you put out 100 of these things in such a short period of time. Me neither. I'm very excited for 99 because it comes before 100, and 100 is Chris Green, who I've been waiting to interview, and everybody gives me grief for not interviewing him, but I've purposefully waited for 100 because he's that important to me. But 99 is important to me tonight because I just think he's such a terrific guy. I watched him from afar. Then I actually got to hang out with him in Vegas, and I really took a liking to him. I just immediately, very warm, very generous, very real, which I appreciate. And I've been watching from afar him helping so many other people with his precious time and yet giving without expectation, which I like. Jason Clark. Welcome, Jason.
Stephen, thank you so much for having me and inviting me. That was very, very kind words. I don't know how to thank you for that. So thank you.
You owe me nothing. Give without expectation is one of my kind of theories I work on in my life. And you too. So we're going to get to all that because I have a couple stories. I have some Jason stories, and I like those when I can tell some stories. But, you know, you're not new to selling. And I think – you know, again, I have to come up with some formula in dog years, like for reselling, because you've been selling, you're like 180 years old or something in the e-commerce world, but you've been selling for 21 years reselling. I mean, that's a long, long time. Clearly, you weren't doing it all on computer 21 years ago, were you?
Well, I mean, I think like most people, you know, we started with eBay back in 1995 when eBay came to the platform market in September, and I just happened to hear the buzz and jumped on there. So, you know, I'm 42 now, so I've literally been reselling for half my life, and it's something that I believe in. It's something I'm a natural at, and I honestly think it was something I was born to do.
But wait, 95, it must have been like DOS-based back then, right? I mean, you know, I know when I started, and I can't remember what year that was, in the 2000s, it was so difficult to put photos on. It was a hassle. Everything was a hassle. 95, it had to be really rudimentary.
Well, you know, I think it's relative, Stephen. And if you take the newest technology today, you think it's the most amazing thing in the world. Yet 5 years from now, let alone 21, you're going to look back and go, it's rudimentary. But yes, in today's terms, it was DOS. It might as well have been DOS. So I'll just to give some of our listeners perspective that aren't that familiar with when eBay and PayPal started, they were separate companies, and PayPal, you know, probably has a billion customers now, at least, you know, 500 million, I'm guessing. But back then when they started, PayPal was this itty bitty company, and they had maybe 3 million people when I started, and they were nobody. And there was this new concept where you could pay people this way, and eventually they merged. And obviously they're both like brother and sister today.
I remember hearing stories that anything you listed sold. Is that true?
The wild, wild west. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, obviously fraud was much more rampant back then. That will always be the case. But it's true. You know, at the end of the day, it's really just people want to move stuff. And when you have this new exciting platform, and it was extremely cheap to list and sell, obviously, like all good things in life, fees and things go up. But it was the wild, wild west. And to a degree, it still can be. But yeah, it was amazing back then.
Was it similar, you know, in the unfriendly look of Craigslist? You know how, you know, even Craigslist has got a little bit fancy, but generally speaking, you know how Craigslist intentionally looks kind of Spartan and character based. Wasn't eBay similar to that way back then?
You know what? I must be getting old because all I remember is the four colors like they're rocking today. So I'm sure it was definitely less friendly. I always remember it as being colorful. So by all means, it was never – I don't believe it was a Craigslist. You know, Craigslist was as simplistic as you can get. So I right. really don't remember.
Okay. What were you selling? What's a 21-year-old sell in the 90s?
When you're 21, making $6.50 an hour – you know, in 1995, and you're just trying to get by and, you know, trying to get enough, gas to put in the tank to take your beater down the road and, you know, try to impress some girl. You'll sell anything you can get your hands on. So I think one of the first things I sold on eBay as far as in quantity, there was a local Las Vegas distributor that sold Las Vegas casino merchandise memorabilia. And they were like, $5 plastic Elvis Presley swinging leg clocks you stick on the wall and, you know, casino dice clocks. It was junk. It was just junk. But you'd put $5 up, you'd sell one or two a week, you'd basically net $5 or $6 profit after that. But, you know, 1995 and you're making $6.50 an hour and you're, you know, you're bringing home $60 a week in eBay money, that's a couple tanks of gas. And So it was a good thing back then.
And how did you ship back then, right? So, I mean, obviously, you know, they didn't have electronic postage, right? So how did you handle that?
You box it up and you haul your butt down to the United States Postal Service and you go do it the hard way.
You stood in line.
Yes.
You know, I just think the reason I'm drilling a little bit on that is I want perspective. I think people need to understand the perspective of where it's come. eBay in the 2000s wasn't that much better, quite frankly. It was better, of course, but because there were ancillary companies that offered the services that eBay didn't, right? So there were photo hosting. You had to host mm-hmm. your photos. I remember that. Yep. And I remember just a bunch of things like that. Now, today, literally on a smartphone, I've seen people at an auction take a picture of an item, put it up, and have it sell by the end of the auction. You know, it's that incredible. And in today's day and age, you can just print the postage and the with the international program where you can ship global shipping. It's incredible. You know, I mean, the frauds, at least in my personal case, has gone down enormously. You know, I remember you couldn't ship to Italy because it would always get stolen. No matter what you sent to Italy, it was always going to get stolen. Now with global shipping, I don't have those problems. How about you?
No, I don't have those problems at all. I mean, I still remember back in the day, I probably only had two claims in about 6 or 7 years of doing it full time, shipping 100 orders a day, 7 days a week. And both of those were international. One was in Greece and one was somewhere over in Europe as well. So, I mean, technology is there for us. And, you know, thank God for that.
All right. You can't let me I'm not going to let you pass with that. 100 items a day, 7 days a week. So clearly the Elvis leg clocks took off, or did you get into another line?
No, I was just young and, you know, didn't really know what I was doing, but I was smart enough to put two and two together and make a few bucks. But, you know, as time went by, you know, you with the Internet kind of exploding at that time and really just being a mishmash and back then you could type in wholesaler and probably find one that was halfway decent. Nowadays, there's so many companies that will shade themselves as a wholesaler, and they're really second, third, fourth down the road. They're not true wholesalers. So
yeah, they're distributors.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot harder. You really got to get boots on the ground and get the shows. But, it was easier to connect back then. There was less clutter. There was less marketing. There was less shenanigans, and you could really just find it a lot quicker. And, you know, I found some places out of New York and, you know, being on the West Coast in Las Vegas, so I'd have to wait for that to come in the mail. And, you know, you're mailing a check out, waiting 4 or 5 days for that to get there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were mailing checks.
Absolutely.
You're right.
Absolutely. Thank God they didn't bounce. But, so you're looking at 10, 12-day turnaround time for, you know, just a traditional thing. Kind of like how wholesale is today, but at least you've got more options today. So, yep.
And you wouldn't have been dealing with China very much then, right?
Oh, 1995. I mean, I didn't know anything about China except people were Chinese. So I definitely
right.
Didn't.
It was probably Japanese or I don't know if Korea would have been around by then, where this stuff would have been coming from. But or you probably had a ton of U.S. manufacturers.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was just U.S.-based. I was really just grasping at straws and saying, you know, if I can get this product, you know, looking at the limited amount of data that was there to see, there was definitely data on eBay and completed auctions. But obviously today, you know, our world is data-driven, and I think the most successful resellers are instituting as much data and software as possible. So back then, you just kind of had to use your intuition. And I think sometimes in business, that's the best thing you have.
You know, it's interesting you say that about people instituting. And I notice in some of the groups I'm in, some people are saying, I'm not scanning anything. You have to learn how to know what it is. The problem there is that assumes everybody else is doing the same thing you are. Your challenge is there are people who, you know, and I use this example when I interview a 21-year-old who's done nothing but know computers since 2 or 3 years old, as far as they can remember. They have a huge competitive advantage because there's no barrier to entry. There's no learning curve for them with these computers. They just have, oh, new software. Oh, this button does that instead of that button, right? And so if you don't take advantage of the technology, you really are putting yourself at a disadvantage for most things. Now, antique Bibles from the blah, 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 yeah, there are people that just know that in the in those book worlds. However, the guy with a smartphone almost knows as much as you do because they have the ability to see what it sold for last week. So they have the almost current market condition where a bookseller has to go back, well, that sold, you know, there was one that sold, you know. And so, you know, it's interesting you say that. So what did you were full-time doing another job and selling on the side. What time did you become a full-time seller?
Well, I mean, you know, that was in my, you know, early 20s when I started eBay, and you know, I went full time for about 7 years, and you know, at some point it just kind of, you know, just petered out. You know, the wholesalers dried up, too much competition, and I was putting in a very large amount of hours, and of course, personal life, and I had a young daughter at the time, and this and that, and it just really got to a point where it ended up not being worth it, even though I was still doing okay, and just decided to go back into the workforce. And
well, it became a job. Could you say that?
Yeah,
100 items a day, 7 days a week. Sounds like a job to me.
Yeah, you know, there's only so many bags of hormone replacement therapy pills that you can sell and bag on a daily basis before you just get tired of looking at the same thing. You know,
I could see it waning. I mean, I could see the excitement in the beginning, but eventually it would wane because it's not enriching in any way, right? Mentally, right? So I get that. So you went into corporate world in the sales, which is a natural progression for somebody like you. You've got that personality where I assume you did quite well.
You know, the funny part was is that if you asked me 10 years ago, the one job I wouldn't want to do, and that would be sales, and that would probably surprise a lot of people, but. Like most things, I think if you put in effort, whether you're a reseller or you have a job or you're a parent or driving to the market, if you put in the right amount of effort, most of the time you're going to do well. So I went into a corporate world where I, you know, decided to not be a reseller and just kind of work my way back up the ladder. So almost taking a step down and just going, you know what, I'm going to go back to corporate, I'm going to get benefits, and I'm going to put in the 5-year grind to get up there. And that's exactly what happened. Unfortunately for me, the day I got to that job, I was surrounded by my teammates, my coworkers, people that I cared for, respected, who were wonderful to me, but the environment was toxic. It was in a sales culture where anybody would lie, cheat, and steal just to get to their sales goals. And I'm a very ethical person. I make mistakes all the time. I've definitely done unethical things in my life, nothing horrific. But at the end of the day, when you're faced with that every hour on the hour, 5 days a week, it wanes on you, and it got to me immediately. But, you know, I moved cross country to New Jersey about 7 years ago, and that was the decision I made, and to go into corporate and work my way up for the long haul and put my head down. I dealt with that pressure and those people and the unethical things that everybody did, and I hated it. I wanted to quit several times, but I just moved there, and that wasn't the right choice for me at the time. So I just put my head down, I worked my ass off, and in about 5 years, I got 4 promotions until I got to a really high level but high pressure sales job where I was doing very well. But ultimately, that last job led me to where I am today, which is I will never work for another person again.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that. So you sit back and you think about, you are who who you hang out with, right? So the 20%, the five people you hang out with. When you're working in an environment with that, that's the people you hang out with because that's who you spend the most amount of time. Agree?
I agree. You brought up a funny memory. There was a TV show back in the 80s, and I can't remember who it was, but he said that exact joke, and the line was, "You are who you hang out with." And he goes, "Well, why did you have to say that to me while I was eating a bowl of fruit flakes?" So it's true. You are who you hang out with. You know, if you extend your arms out and you're reaching your friends and your family and your coworkers, the people that you're spending 99% of your time with, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree most of the time.
Well, you become that because all of a sudden that becomes your social norm, right? So it's always, somebody who's an alcoholic wants to be around other people so they don't look so bad. That's the social norm, right? So then, hey, of course everybody's drinking, right? Or in this scenario, everybody's toxic because that's what's expected. And, you know, much of corporate America still is that way, unfortunately. And that's a challenge, right? Because that is, I think you're a good example, who somebody who's tasted freedom and then went into this thinking, oh, there must be, you know, the freedom is great, but there must be more in this corporate world because let's face it, everybody's doing it. You're not the norm when you're in this free job. And so you take the norm and then you get to see the norm might not be so good. And I think that's a great place. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I want to hear more about your trek back west. Okay, so we'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. Told you, great guy. Okay, so in this segment, this is where the solid advice comes in. I love the way Jason suggests, a lot of S's, and nobody's going to like them, or somebody's not going to like them. Anyway, source, ship. Okay, so take a day and source the products you need. Take the next day, ship the products you got. The next day, source the products you need. The next day, ship the products you got. Rinse and repeat. You will scale to a number. So let's use an example. He's saying, hey, if you want to hit $1,000 in sales and your average selling price is $35, you divide that backwards. That means you need to sell 29 products. Okay, if you have a 50% sell-through rate, double that. Okay, so now you need to get roughly 58 products. Boom, you stay out there until you get your 58 products that meet the goal, that meet the targets that you put in place, that, you know, the hard, fast numbers. And we learn from other people, you don't deviate and rationalize. You get your 58 products, you bring them home. The next day, you ship them, period. You ship them. Next day, you go out and get your 58 products again. Next day, ship them. You do that week in and week out. First off, you haven't created yourself a job. You've created yourself a focused, intentional work program, process, call it what you like, you will have success. And I think this is great advice, and Jason gets into a lot more. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Jason Clark, and Jason lives in Vegas, if you haven't caught that in the discussion. He took a trek to New Jersey. There was probably a woman involved there somewhere, my bet, right? But you decided to head back west. Was it hard? I mean, because, you know, the Vegas that I was at not that long, I guess it was earlier this year, it's such a different place than a New Jersey. I mean, it might as well be opposite. I mean, it just doesn't seem very similar in any way. How long have you been back in Vegas now?
I got back in the middle of November. It was November 15th. I had
Okay, so not that long, no. Right? So your frame of reference is what you knew Vegas was, and then you were in New Jersey for quite a long time. So now, where would you say, are you a Vegas guy, period?
Well, if you're born in Vegas, you're a Vegas guy. You know, being 42, you know, I literally grew up as a teenager as Vegas grew up. You know, I still remember being 12, 13 years old and seeing that the town population was 250,000 and went about 10 miles around, and it literally just spread out like a big circle. So as I literally grew up as a man, Las Vegas grew up as a man, as I like to say. So I've seen nothing but growth there my whole life until recently, basically when I went to New Jersey. Obviously the housing market crashed and other things, and Las Vegas was by far one of the most affected. So it was a little depressing there for a few years.
Well, I'm just trying to get culturally, are you a Vegas guy as opposed to that New Jersey hustle kind of thing? And Vegas has its own hustle. I mean, let's face it, you know, it's 24/7, you know, it's just, but there is a difference. Would you agree? I don't know if I can put my maybe it's, I didn't run into pushy people in Vegas. Maybe they're there. I didn't run into those people. There might be tourists, but in New Jersey and in New York, I mean, that's the culture. It is very, you know, hey, you know, hustle bustle, pushy, pushy, pushy. Did I miss that part of Vegas?
No, you know, well, when you grow up in Vegas, nobody's from there. Everybody comes from everywhere else. So when I decided to move to New Jersey, everybody's like, Jason, that's going to be challenging. You're going to be in a new environment, new people, new customs, new people are different. I go, well, I know what I'm getting into because my entire life I've seen nothing but everybody from every state and all over the world come constantly because I work in the tourism industry my life. So for me, I knew what I was getting into. Yes, I didn't, you know, before visiting there, I didn't know, you know, how it looked and how it smelled and things like that, so to speak. But I think having that advantage of working in the tourism industry, it definitely softened the blow. But, you know, as you said, New Jersey, New York, even, you know, Pennsylvania, like where you're from, there's a little bit of grit. There's a little bit of sandpaper there, and you're going to get it the moment you get there. And to a degree, it toughens you up, and I'll be forever grateful being there. New Jersey, New York, they're wonderful places, wonderful people. I think because a lot of the people in that area have immigrated in from other countries, maybe one generation ago or whatever, I think the people there are some of the best entrepreneurs in the world. They came with nothing, and they really taught my generation how to work hard and work the real way.
Yeah, I agree with you there. There is a lot of entrepreneurs. You don't think about it, you know, but culturally, there are certain cultures that have really adapted. That's what they know. I mean, they just came with nothing. They started something and they expanded, and they bring family to expand right along with them. And you don't see that much at this generation. It's not the same. Although with the e-commerce generation coming on now, I mean, will you encourage your daughter for e-commerce? I mean, or what are you thinking?
Well, the first thing I encourage my daughter to do is be kind to others. That's non-negotiable. Second thing is to get an education, do your homework, get good grades. Third thing is to pick out what you want to do in life that will make you happy no matter what it will pay. And if that involves e-commerce, absolutely, she'll obviously have a leg up. And of course, you know, I preach to her every day. I talk to her about business well more than I should for having a wonderful, beautiful, super smart 14-year-old daughter. But, you know, after doing this for the last 18 months, some of it has started to take hold. You know, I recently bought a glass to-do list, you know, board. And, you know, I came home one night and she had put, you know, make your goal to be happy. That was it. And she had been preaching that to me recently. Like, it's not always about sales. It's not about numbers. Your goal should be to be happy, Dad. And that's something that I taught her. And here she is, 14, giving her father advice and good advice at that. So very proud of her. And I'll support her in anything that she does.
That's interesting. I like that. When the student becomes the teacher, right? Mm-hmm. That's really what it is. You know, that's really is your obligation. You know, back in the day, we would teach, you know, I think of my older son, it's like, oh, you got to go to college. You got to get a job. You're going to have that job forever, blah, blah, blah. Not happening today. They, you know, the good news is they have figured out that that really isn't a realistic expectation. So it's more important, as you say, to find something that's going to make you happy. Happy might be a weird word, might be content, might be a better word. Because contentment with business is important. Happiness in your personal life and in your social life and that, I think it's different. Okay, so you're selling and did you start in the thrift world or did you head right into Amazon's business world? I mean, when you started back up 18 months ago, or did you just jump into both?
Well, I I met a gentleman around the corner that had a yard sale one day. This is back in New Jersey in 2014 in the fall, and went over there and said hi and bought a few things and, you know, went on my way. A week later, I was driving by and there he was again, where I could tell, with a bunch of new stuff, and talked to him, bought a few things, and came again another week and there he was again. And so, you know, with these conversations, he was about my age, you know, late 30s or so. And, you know, I says, obviously you're, you know, where are you getting this stuff? You know, storage unit, auctions, whatever. And he kind of told me a few places he was getting it from. And I go, well, you're obviously selling some of it on eBay. And he's like, yes, eBay and FBA. And as soon as he said FBA, I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard of it. And the fact that I'd been basically in e-commerce most of my life, once he said FBA, my ears perked up and I go, what's that? And I knew within 5 seconds of what he told me it was, that for somehow I had the blinders over my eyes for the last 10 years and I'd never heard of it. And literally when I left there, I went home and I Googled it and I hadn't stopped looking at it since, and here I am today. So I have to blame that gentleman in the yard sale for where I am today.
Well, I would say that the 100 packages a day all that time ago would probably be a limiting factor for you, right? You didn't want to head back to that level, right? That's probably something you never want to do again, right? Because that, let's face it, that's a job, right? You don't want to have a job. And so the fact that you could still do something that you were obviously good at, if you were selling 100 packages a day, 7 days a week, that means you're good at selling and buying because you found products that could sell. This had to be very, very attractive because you could send stuff in. Was there an FBA warehouse in New Jersey or anything around that you started seeing the Amazon? Or is it like when you buy a car, all of a sudden you see all those same cars? So once you found out about FBA, it was everywhere and you just started devouring it?
Oh, absolutely. And I try to, you know, I think I'm a very – I like to devour lots of things. So if I think it's worth devouring, I'm going to jump in with 2 feet and go for it until it proves me wrong. So – yeah, absolutely. And I definitely did, you know, start with thrift and retail. And, you know, you may agree, but there's plenty of, you know, New Jersey is a very big populated state and there's Pennsylvania and New York attached. So you have limitless amounts of places to source. And I hear
limitless.
And every time I hear somebody say that I'm struggling, it's, you know, in that area, at least, it's not because of areas to source. It really comes back to knowledge. And
yeah, it's an understanding. They don't have an understanding of what.
So,
yeah.
So that's where I started there and just worked my way up into the many different things I do today.
I mean, were you doing books and toys? Is that what you primarily started there?
I think I'm the only human being selling on Amazon that doesn't sell books. I probably sold – I had a very good first year. More better than most, and I probably sold 10 books.
Okay.
But I was on a hot streak this year. I think I'm up to 30 books this year, Stephen. So.
Oh. Ooh.
I would say just you know, being that, you know, I was a full time seller on eBay for so many years, you get to know those little nooks and crannies of things, whether they're toys or electronics or this and that. And you know, it's kind of like the yard sale mentality. It's a mishmash, and if you have enough education and knowledge of product, you know, you may be able to go to yard sale and find one thing that you know you can buy. I'm able to find 10. And now multiply that times 20 stops a day. So for me, I'll sell anything. You know, I try to tell people that don't, you know, it's just a transaction. Take the emotions out of it. Because people are like, well, what do I buy? What do I do? I go, buy anything that you think that you can sell that's within your parameters, whether it's your ROI or whatever. Take the emotions out of it and you will be much more efficient at it.
I like what you said, you know, buy 20 items or 10 items times 20 stores. Have you ever thought about as we're talking about transactions, saying, you know, my goal today is not to spend, you know, $100. My goal today is to buy 100 units. And if I buy them in the right, you know, profit margin, right, if I'm going to make $10, right, and I got to buy 100 units, and let's assume they all sell, which that's a bad assumption, but let's just make it, that's $1,000 times 5 days a week, that's $5,000 a week. Take off Amazon's third, you know, including shipping in and all the rest of the jazz, you know, that's a pretty good living. So there really it becomes a buy cost. Have you ever thought about it that way, or are you more of, hey, I want to spend $1,000 today?
No, you actually hit the nail on the head. So a lot of people will say, Jason, how did you succeed so well in your first 10, 11 months of your FBA life last year? Because I started at the very end of January of 2015. And it came down to setting very strict goals. And that goal was, is when I went out sourcing, let's say it was 3 days a week or 4 days a week on average, one of the two, is I would not come home until I got to 80 items. Now,
oh, I love it.
Keep that in mind when you're starting out and you're maybe not engaged in certain categories, your lack of knowledge is not to where it is, obviously, down the road many months later. You're out there longer and longer. There was many days that I'd leave the house at 7 a.m. to beat the rush hour traffic, and I didn't get home until 9, 10 o'clock at night. And I don't care how good your day was. That's kind of miserable, but that's the learning curve. And more importantly, that's the effort that I needed to do to get there. So I never came home with less than 80 items, and it just got easier and easier. So, you know, by month 4 or 5, I was getting done by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon and going home to take a nap. So
I think this is really practical advice. I want to pause back on this. And again, I love the foundation. I'm all about, I don't know what, I seem to be on a kick about building a strong foundation. And I think this is a great example of one. I want us to talk about this a little bit more. So I think you're right. As a new seller, you've got to put in the time. You're going to have to go scan, and I hate it, Target end cap. You got to go do it, though. It's the only way you're going to get good, is you got to do that stuff and go to Walmart and all the clearance, all the jazz, right? But I love what you're saying. And I think Chris Dupree said it really well, Bonafide Hustler, is that if it was outside of his margin, he would walk by it. So you have to have that discipline. So if you're disciplined enough to say, I'm going to get 80 items or whatever your target is, and then you're as disciplined as Chris is to say, I'm not going to take things, I'm not going to start to rationalize, because I'm guilty of it, and I think a lot of sellers would say they are too, but you take that transaction and break it down into that simple transaction. I'm going to find X number of items that are going to give me this range, period. Otherwise, I'm not, and I'm going to, until I'm successful. I think you're right. You will force yourself to learn very quickly, and you will cut that down that time because you really are forcing yourself. You're going to be, I'm going to hit it, and you'll start to set little goals. I think that's a much more manageable way for somebody to start in this business than saying, you know, go spend $1,000 or I don't have $1,000 to spend. You know, by doing the math backwards, you'll know how many units you can buy, period. Right? Now your sourcing budget's over. You bought your 36 units, you move on. When you were doing your 80 units or whatever it was a day, did you play in then the calculation of how much you can process the next day? Is that, or you didn't go home and process the same day? I guess not in the beginning for sure.
You're right. Definitely not in the beginning but you know, down the road 6 months later when I was getting home at 1:30 in the afternoon, if I still had a little bit of energy, I'm like, you know, let's go ahead and start this shipment and maybe you could get it done by the end of the night. Not usually, but you'd basically be done very early the next morning. So,
and then you're done for the day. I mean, basically that's a down day to do whatever the other stuff of the business, right?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in I say shop, ship, shop, ship. And for me, it was, whether it's a Monday, so usually Monday was shop. So it would be Monday shop, Tuesday ship, or Wednesday shop, Thursday ship, Friday, Saturday, depending on what your personal life has going on. You can make that determination whether that's your fourth shop day or not. And obviously every week would be different. So I'm a big shop ship guy. And, you know, you could really, if you know what your schedule is the next day, if you know you have the whole day to yourself at home, you're like, I have 14, 16 hours to do it. You may push yourself and go, you know what? I'm at 100 items today and it's 3 o'clock. You know what? I've got all day tomorrow. I've got all night. There's nothing going on. I'm going to go ahead and push for another hour. I'm going to hit two more stops. And sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. But on average, let's say you bring home another 10 or 20 items. That's when you start pulling away. That's when you start really getting ahead in the race and then you bang it out the next day. So just keep on track. Having a schedule and putting goals is the reason why, at least for me, in the last 18 months, you know, I've only had 3 months where I've had months that were less than the month before. And those 3 months were because I moved cross country. I was dealing with some tax stuff for a couple of weeks that took me off the grid and a personal matter. So, you know, I've pretty much been nonstop growth because I put those goals into place and I will not stop until I hit them.
I love it. Now, is your goal to ship in more items than the month before or just sell more at a higher price?
Well, it's a combination. I mean, at this point, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be at the level to where, and you spoke about this, I believe, on another podcast recently, where you get to a point to where it's no longer about money. It's about time.
Right.
I am completely happy with the money I make on a monthly basis. Of course, I would love to make more, and I am trying to make more. but at the end of the day, at what cost, at what time, at what sanity, you know, and it's about time at this point for me.
Well, it is a diminishing return when you're by yourself. There is a point where it becomes, you know, your effort isn't worth the additional profit because you really don't get to use it, right? And, you know, that was one of the cool things that Chris Dupree again and I spoke a lot about is mental health and physical health. How have you been able to bring both of those into your life, or have you?
I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question? I didn't catch it.
Well, I'm thinking about, as I go forward with these interviews, I really want to spend a little bit of time talking to each person, how they're dealing with their physical life and then their mental life. Because I think, you know, it's so easy to get consumed in the buying, right? I mean, let's face it, there's a high. You go out and you spend a bunch of money, you get rewarded, you almost get immediate gratification when you send it in and it sells, you know, and then you do it again and again and again. And so are you able to put aside time for your physical health?
Sure, I am able to, but it's a matter of do I choose to do that? I definitely don't choose to do that enough. And the reason why is, you know, I'm in a big growth phase right now. I'm in a big expansion phase to try to get me to those ultimate goals. And, you know, I sell in many different ways. My revenue comes from many different ways, you know, Amazon FBA, you know, OARA. I'm actually moving into PL heavy here in the next week, which is definitely my long-term goal. And, you know, I also, you know, invest in people. And that may sound kind of weird. I don't mean employees. You know, getting a couple of employees has been wonderful. I have a local sourcer and I have an admin, and they're both wonderful. And that does create time to become more healthy, to spend more time. You know, we're having this podcast right now. I'm in California right now on a two-day vacation. I'm enjoying myself. Why? Because the health part is very important. Now,
well, then that's the mental health. So you might not be working on the physical health. You're working on the mental health.
Yeah.
Which is just as important.
No, absolutely. It's huge. You know, finding that, you know, I know everybody doesn't like to use the word balance all the time, but, you know, at some point there's a tipping point and you have to, you know, when you get to the levels, when you're in that middle ground, trying to get to the top ground, time becomes way more important than money. So it's about streamlining things. It's about bringing on staff. It's about maybe using a pack and prep service. It's about software. It's anything that can speed up time, you know, to get to my ultimate goal. And, you know, obviously, you know, there's a financial part to that goal to get you maybe to that end goal, whether it's passive income or real estate or the house on the beach or whatever. You know, one of the things that I do is I invest in people. And what I mean by that is I do private lending to people. I've been doing private lending for about 9 months now. Some people that you may know and other people that you definitely do not know. And what I mean by is I invest in people. I invest with other resellers. I do private reseller lending. Mm-hmm. And there's three things in people that I invest in they have to have. One, they have to have a proven recent track record of success. And the size of their sales does not matter. Success is success. If you talk to me a year ago, I was very successful for being at the 6 month part in Amazon FBA. Could I have scaled up quicker? Could I have made a better return by maybe having a source of capital? Yes, I probably could have that time. The second thing that I have to invest with people is they have to show that they're consistent hard workers over time again and again and have a realistic goal and a reasonable plan to get there. I don't care if you're a millionaire. If you do not have to, if you cannot put your time into place, if you cannot put effort into place, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, that's not a good recipe for success. And above all, more importantly than anything, is I invest in character. Like I said, I don't care if you have $1 million. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care how many employees you have. It doesn't matter how smart you are. If you're not willing to run your business ethically and try to do the right thing when those situations come up, then all those other things that you have to me are worthless. And if you take those three things, invest in those three things that people have, if they have all three, that's a very good recipe and a very good chance for success.
All right, we got to pull a little bit of that apart. I got to understand a little bit more. So let's talk the first thing. So you said you don't really care what their sales are. So then you would care what their profits are? Is that what you're looking at?
Well, Not necessarily.
Or were you just, referring that you don't care if they were only $10,000 a month seller or $100,000 a month seller? Is that what you meant by you didn't care what their sales were?
That is correct. Obviously.
Okay. All right. I get that. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. But you would you have to see some kind of return. And then the last thing where you were saying that I'm trying to think of, how you would structure something like this. Is this a formal arrangement?
Some of them are actually handshake agreements.
Okay.
Other ones are actually formal legal documents. Absolutely.
Okay. And so, there's a term, right? There's a definitive period of time until, and you would expect a return. Are these new sellers or experienced sellers?
Well, it goes back to one of the first thing that I invest in people, and that's people who have a proven track record of success. It doesn't matter, if you're able to knowledge up, as I like to use the phrase all the time, ahead of time, like I did. I was studying and learning the FBA platform for about 6 months before I jumped in full speed. I came in with that pep in my step, with the wind in my back. So you've got people that may have only been on the platform, whatever reseller platform that is, for 6 months. You can see a projection. It doesn't take a fool to know that, after the iPhone 4 came out, that when they finally were going to come out with the iPhone 5, that was not even in a concept mode yet, that it was going to be successful. Why? Because you see the track record of success, even though it was early in that type of model of phone. So getting behind people that are maybe limited to capital for certain reasons, maybe they have student loans, maybe their wife just had a medical issue, maybe they just had twins, things like that, to where, we are all surprised by debt sometimes in life, and sometimes it just slows down the train, so to speak. I don't really invest in people that aren't showing a track record. There's no reason to do that. There's too much risk involved. So
you're watching the hustle from afar, and you're watching it over time, and you're looking back at consistency, right? Are they doing the things necessary, and are they adapting as the market is evolving, right? Let's face it, the market is evolving every day, and so you're watching those things. I think they're clues. I mean, I think all those things are good clues. I'm thinking of like a lending club and things like that. It's the way you're describing. It's very similar in concept, and so you would help buy inventory, for example, or if somebody came across a very large deal, you might help fund that deal for a short period of time. Is that kind of a good example?
Yeah, actually, I just did a short-term deal weeks ago. Actually, I think my funds are actually probably in my mailbox today. I didn't hit the mail before I hit the road today. But I like to invest in people for periods of time, generally in the six-month range, because I've obviously done my due diligence on the back end. I'm constantly looking for winners. I'm constantly looking for character people and people that show the right business ethics and even their attitude. If you have good business ethics, but you're just a nasty person, I want nothing to do with you.
Because at the end of the day, you don't want that in your life.
You just don't. You don't want it. So yeah. I don't need the money, but I'm trying to streamline things to me, it's kind of like passive income, just with a lot more risk.
No, I think it's a very smart move, and I think there is a lot of opportunity, because how many people have run into situations where they wish they could pull the trigger, but to put 100% of their cash available into that is not such a great idea, because they have, they have other things, especially because it takes a little while to sell. And in your scenario, you're saying, hey, I'll invest in you. Let's buy it together. You'll sell it. You'll make money. It'll be a little longer, but then you'll pay me back and that kind of thing. I think it's a very smart move. And I think of all the peer-to-peer lending that's out there right now. This is the handshake version of that. I think it's very cool and pretty cutting edge. I see a lot of people saying they wish they had more money because, they would just buy more or what have you. So I can see the need for it. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out over long term. What happens when somebody doesn't pay you? It's going to happen. I mean, anybody who extends credit, there's a risk because you make money and eventually you don't, but hopefully you win more than you lose, right? Is that really where you're going with it?
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to point number three, it's character. So, those things could obviously happen. And anytime you put money on the table, whether you're buying something online, you're buying a Target end cap, or you're lending $20,000 to somebody, you're extending risk. So if you're dealing with character person and you've done your due diligence ahead of time, if something happens, hopefully it happened for an unknown reason. Maybe your account got shut down. Maybe there was an outstanding IRS tax loan from 4 years ago that came up. You know, life happens, things happen. But, you know, discussing those things ahead of time, having a backup plan. Okay, what happens if you lose your account? What happens if they have inventory? Do they have access to this and that? You've got to be willing to lose that money in whole, but I don't want to invest that way without having 2 to 3 backup plans. They may not be the best backup plans. It may take a while to get my capital back. And maybe the best thing is to really help them get back up and running so they can get back, you know, work in that training, basically just not take any payments for 4 or 5 months. It is what it is. Lending is what it is. And if you're dealing with character people, generally when blank hits the fan, what do character people do? They pull up their pants, they put their boots on, and they get to work, and they find a way to fix the problem.
Hmm. But the other thing I like is that you are diversifying your risk, right? So while they might still be resellers selling on today's platform of Amazon or eBay, and whoever knows what the next platform will be, right? There will be another one at some point. So you're saying, hey, I'm going to spread out my risk because if your account gets shut down, then you have a lot of risk, right? In this scenario, you have it out with 2 or 3 other people. The likelihood of all 4 getting shut down is not so great. So I think it's a smart move, and it's interesting. I haven't seen anybody else doing it. I've seen a lot of people borrowing money, and there are a lot of companies that will lend you money, of course, but I've not seen anybody else actually being the bank, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for you. So you're moving more out of the retail arb, out of online arb, into wholesale and private label. I'm interested in the private label. How have you have you taken any courses on private label, or is it just self-taught again?
You know, I've always been self-taught, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I think I've had a lack of help quite a bit along the way, and I don't need to say that in a derogatory fashion. I mean that as just fact. Once again, I try to learn from people who are the best. I try to – those people hopefully are character people, you know, whether it's going to seminars and meeting Andy Slammons, who's amazing, right, somebody who's extremely passionate, just surrounding myself with those people and, yes, bringing in tutorials and courses and things like that. And that's where I'm at right now. I'm ready to go.
Okay, because he, you know, and he'll tell you the same thing, is that what he teaches is you – if you put in the time, it's free out there. You know, the only difference is they put it together in a concise and they filtered out all the other noise to make it buy you time, right? And so he's very clear about that. You don't need to buy his course to learn how to do private label. If you're willing to put in the time and effort, you can do it yourself. And that's what I always appreciate about him, because, you know, he's not selling all the time, and that's what you want. Okay, so let's talk about that, because Jason is a giver too. One of the things I notice in the green room specifically, and I guess even just in your general posts, is you are forever offering to help people. You're offering to help people. You're giving them a hand up. You're giving advice all the time. Where does that come from? Is that just your way? Were you that way in high school, in college? I mean, is that your parents? I mean, where does that come from?
My mother was a giver. She was a wonderful woman, and, you know, she instilled in me to be good. She instilled me to do things the right way and ethically. And, you know, I instill that in my daughter. And, you know, that's really where it started. But, you know, in my reseller life over the last 20 plus years, for the most part, it's really been myself, you know, whether I was in a relationship or not. I may have had verbal support, but I really didn't have that physical help. And at the end of the day, if I didn't get out of bed and I didn't put boots on the ground and get out there, the bills weren't getting paid. So I think it was just, I've had to do it the hard way. And I know there's people out there who've done it much harder than me, but, you know, I think doing it the hard way, it puts some grit on you, and it forces you to be a harder worker, and it just makes you a better worker and a better seller. So,
Well, it seems to me you're giving a hand up. I don't see you giving handouts. To me, the advice or those other things, they're encouraging, they're positive, but basically there's a lot of fundamental stuff and foundational stuff, kind of similar to what I'm trying to do, is to really get that foundational stuff right for people. I noticed that a lot, and that I think that comes back in spades. Has anybody that you've given advice to come back and given you a success that they had because of it?
Yes. You know, at the end of the day, Stephen, I'm going to make X amount of dollars every day. It's going to be different every day, and it's going to be enough to cover my bills times X. And sure, I have to work for it, but you know, if you eat chocolate mousse every day, it may be the greatest thing in the world, but you're going to get tired of it. I do not get tired.
You don't have enough lobster, it's soap.
Correct. Right? I will never get tired of helping people. I will never get tired of helping people give a hand up. You know, going from a corporate job where I was literally miserable and almost on the verge of tears sometimes, I know there's people out there. We read it. We read it in the green room. We read it on the web or even in our own lives. And I don't want to see people struggle like me. They are good people. They're people way better than me, just people in general that are struggling. And if I can give just a little bit of time, a little bit of my voice, a little bit of my passion and my energy to get them off their butt, to give them a little push in the back, give them a little bit of knowledge, then at the end of the day, I'm going to make a friend. I'm going to make somebody who's probably going to end up giving back to me, even though if they don't, that's completely fine. You know, I feel better making friends and making people wealthy with whatever that wealthy is, whether it's money or time to have with their kids and their husbands and their wife, or just time to sleep. That, to me, that's wealth. Money isn't wealth. Money is something that's good, but it's really the people that are wealthy.
You know, I like what you were saying, though, about helping somebody, because I agree with you that there are people struggling out there right now. And they, you know, one of the things they see is people having incredible success, right? People post the positive stuff on Facebook. They generally don't post the negative stuff, right? As you said, life happens, right? And so the fact that you can show somebody that, hey, I'm struggling, or I have struggled in the past too, let me help you through this, and there's light at the end of the tunnel, I think that's a valuable. I saw somebody post out there today somewhere, you know, maybe somebody should have a pair up mentor kind of thing. So when you are off, and you will be off, right? Everybody has an off day, that they can help pull you up. And I think that that's kind of a neat thing. And like I said, I see you doing it continuously with never an expectation. I don't see anything saying, hey, if you want to talk for half an hour, it's $20. It's, hey, anybody wants to talk for the next 20 hours, I'm going to be on the, or 20 minutes, I'm going to be on the road. Feel free. We could talk through an issue or anything you want to talk about. I think that I would say that part of your success that you have is because of that. You have to be better. The more you talk about it and you talk with others, you get a confidence about you. You probably hear something from them too that teaches you. Is that fair?
Yes, you know, and even Superman has kryptonite in his life. We all have kryptonite in our life. What are you going to do when you get knocked on your ass? Sometimes you physically can't get up. Sometimes Superman even needs to put his hand out and get a lift up from somebody. So something I learned a month ago at the Rocky Mountain Reseller Conference in Denver, where there was an amazing host of panel of people, and it was just an amazing event, was one of the speakers said, you should get an accountability partner in your life. And I took that to heart. And within a day or two, I had found somebody that I had been networking with only for about a month. And we seemed to be on the same page, the way that we were character-wise, the way that we were with our effort, just things lined up very well. And so we agreed to be accountability partners for each other moving forward. And it's been probably the greatest investment that I've done since I've started my reseller business, is to give to this person whatever she needs and in return give back to me. And I'm not just talking about business. I'm talking about sales. I'm not talking about any of that. Just give back in any ways, personal, business, spiritual, whatever that person needs, to do your best. And, you know, this person is so full of energy. She's so full of compassion. She's full of fire. And she gives advice back with no excuses. And it works both ways. If she's having a bad day, I got to tell her to get off her butt. If it goes the other way around, she's got to tell me to get off my butt. So getting an accountability partner in your life is a different way of helping somebody. And in return, you will get help back. So find somebody out there, find an accountability partner. Maybe it's your husband, maybe it's your wife, maybe it's your kids, maybe it's your pastor, maybe it's another reseller, one of the 20 different Facebook groups you are out there. It doesn't matter what their sales level is. Are they a good character person? Do they, Are they able to realize what your dreams are for your business and maybe even your personal life? And can they at least give you good advice for you? And I've become such a better person in the last month because of that personally and because of business. So I highly encourage that.
Well, Travis will be listening, and he'll appreciate that because I know he wanted to affect people's lives, and it sounds like he did. And that is an awesome thing, Travis Ross, who put on that conference. Him and a bunch of other guys. I don't want to downplay those, but I knew that was one of Travis's goals. I love the fact that you went to that and you met some great people. Was that your first conference? I think you went to a green room conference, right? I don't know if it was a formal conference as much as Travis's, the reseller, the Rocky Mountain, conference. Was that your first kind of formal reselling conference?
That would have been, ASD, which obviously okay. is when I met you and your lovely wife, among so many other wonderful people, really a life changer there. But yes, that was as far as flying out of state, and I've got many more that I look to go to this year.
Yeah, and I try to encourage people that, you know, I don't go and you know, it's not a criticism. It's not that I go and I sit and listen to every speaker and I learn a lot. But every single person I learn something from, so I want to say that. But for me, it's the relationships that you make at these things when you sit there and you can look them in the eye when you're talking to them. There's something different than hiding behind your computer muscles, right? Mm-hmm. It's so – they get to see the good and the bad, right? You don't get to see only the good because that's what everybody puts up is just the good. Well, now they get to see Andy out me for snoring. one of the things I saw him out there. You know, hey, it is what it is. But you know what? I could call him tomorrow. He'd be right here if I need something because that's the kind of friend, right? And that relationships are what really I get from these conferences. And I go to a lot of them, and I'll probably go to more of them because I enjoy it so much. And I also enjoy finding people that are on the same page with me about business. And I like that too. And I think that was a good conference you were at for that kind of thing. So you do plan on doing more of them. That's interesting.
Absolutely. In fact, I was talking to my partner and my accountability partner over the last 2 days, and we've already decided to go to another conference this year in the sexual wellness area. So that's something we're moving into. So absolutely, there's so many, you know, ASDs coming up, Magic Show, as we were discussing earlier. There's so many conferences out there, and you don't have to fly cross country. And people will always ask, Jason, how do I find a wholesaler? Well, why don't you go to a show that has 100 of them and that's all that's there? And they're there to sell you something. You're there to buy something. It's a perfect match.
Every town has them.
Every town has them. Look in your paper. Do a search for your town and wholesaler or trade shows. It's really not as difficult as people think. And at the end of the day, just put on your clothes, put on your shoes, go out there, bring your smile and your handshake, and you're going to do business.
And I think a small trade show is a much better place to start than an ASD because ASD is overwhelming just because it's, you know, 11 miles of walking and 99% of it you're not interested. You're looking for that 1%. Well, when there's, you know, 20,000 vendors, finding that 1% is a challenge. When there's 120 vendors, it's a lot easier and it's a lot more manageable. And you get to have a lot more discussions because you're able to talk to all 120. That's not an unreasonable number. We have in Philadelphia, there's a trade show I like to go to, and it's, I can always find a vendor there. Every year I've gone, I can find a vendor, you know, and like you said, it's not very far. I don't have to fly. I don't have to do any of those things. But now I've graduated to the bigger events, and I find, the skills that I've honed at those smaller events really play well when you get to those bigger ones. You have a confidence about you. Is that fair?
I'm sorry, you were breaking up there at the end, Steve. Oh, just repeat the last line.
Well, it's fair, at least in my world, I'm making a statement that the confidence that you build up at those small trade shows allows you to, you know, speak the language when you get to these big shows, and you're able to filter through the lines of junk, right? You just go past it, you know, like ASD is a great example. I've never seen so much laundry soap in my life. Every booth on that one floor had exactly the same merchandise. Well, if they all have it, that means there's a lot of it. You avoid it, and you just get right past it. You're able to get filter all that stuff right out. And again, I think it's because I've been to small trade shows and I've honed my skills there.
Yeah, I agree. You know, at the end of the day, how many people just wake up and go, I'm going to run a marathon today or go to ASD? it's a whole lot easier to train for a 5K. So go find a 5K in your area, meaning a small trade show, and, you know, get your feet wet, and you're going to be that much more confident when you got to go to ASD and you are running that marathon, that 11-mile, you know, 1,000-vendor show. So absolutely, comfortability is huge. If you're not comfortable doing something, you're probably not going to be successful. You're going to be not confident. You're not going to – you're just going to be
but
nervous.
But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Right? You're not saying you shouldn't do it. You're saying if you're not comfortable in it. There's something to be said about getting good at it, though, right?
I agree. You know, I mean, personally, I have a fear nothing mentality, but I think I'm kind of one of the few, and, you know, sometimes that bites me in the butt. But, you know, as a whole, absolutely get comfortable. You know, going to a wholesale show or becoming a reseller, it's kind of like a relationship. You have to kind of feel it out, and it has to develop. So it's the same thing.
I think that's really good. What's your personal habits? I like the shop, ship, shop, ship. So your goal is to get everything you have out of the house, warehouse, garage, whatever. Any other personal habits that you find that you think others could benefit from?
As far as processes or?
Just, you know, getting up the same time, you know, doing, you know, true habits.
True habits. I think for people that are doing retail arbitrage and thrift, you know, stuff where you're doing, you know, basically non-online stuff and wholesale and private label, if you need to physically leave your house to get a product, you're waking up at that normal time. You're waking up at 7. You're brushing your teeth. You're going to do breakfast, this and that, read the paper, and out the door you go at 8:30, right into rush hour traffic with the rest of the miserable people in the world. Why are you doing that? Get out of the house at 7:30, beat the rush hour traffic. Why? There's plenty of stores that are open from 6 a.m. on, and trust me, they're out there. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, plenty of those stores are open. Spread your wings. Find those stores. Source places you've never done before. Why? Because they may be a honey hole just right around the corner from your house. It may change your life. It may help you level up. It's knowledge. You got to get out there. And the earlier you start, you just save 30 to 45 minutes in that rush hour. Time is so valuable. And guess what? If you're starting earlier, you're probably getting to your 80-year goal or whatever it is earlier than if you left the house at 8:30 and you're stuck. So now you're done with your day at 3 o'clock and you're beating rush hour home. That is a great way to save an hour to an hour and a half if you're anywhere near some type of metropolitan city. You know, when I was in New Jersey, I mean, I don't have to tell you, Steven, the Turnpike, Garden State Parkway, wherever I was heading. I went to Philly a lot. I went to New York. I source in multi-states. And you better believe I was out the door at 7 a.m. I was at my destination at 8 o'clock. I'd rather have breakfast in a parking lot of a place that's going to open at 9 o'clock and I could relax, I could check my emails, I can snooze in the car, than to waste 45 minutes in rush hour traffic looking at the life I left to become a reseller and then doing it on the way home. Why would you want to do that to yourself twice a day?
Well, you create a job again. And I heard you mention about the 80 items again. And I'm telling you, that's one of the foundation things I'm taking away from this conversation again, is set your target to buy units. I don't care what units they are. They're shoes, they're toothpaste, they're, you know, brushes, whatever it is. Set it to buy units that meet the standards that you want, and then set that target, write it down on paper, and go do it. I just love it. I think that is the skill that I'm convinced that's one of the biggest skills that you have developed, and that has really taken you so far. What are you doing to learn? Are you listening to podcasts or you know, YouTube videos, reading books? What do you suggest for readers, for listeners?
You know, I'm a part of a Facebook group called The Green Room. I know you're in there, Stephen, and you know, it is a paid group and it's worth every cent, and I'm not here to plug them. It's an amazing room of about 530 people. I spend a lot of my time there. There's plenty of free Facebook groups and YouTube videos out there, and I encourage you to try all those free ones out for sure. So thegreenroomuniversity.com is part of The Green Room. Of course, e-commerce momentum, I've got to give you. And it's not a shameless plug. I mean, most of the people on this podcast will know, you know, the other 98 people before me. There is not one podcast I've ever listened to that is not full of passionate people with financial wealth, with e-commerce wealth. It's an amazing thing. So, you know, when you're starting up, you need to watch videos and read and learn until your eyes bleed late at night. And when they're done bleeding, read and watch some more. That's what you need to do. If you think my first couple months as a reseller were fun, you're out of your mind. I didn't sleep much at all. I probably got 5 hours of sleep a night for the first 6 months, and I was sourcing 14 to 18 hours a day. I needed to get up to speed as quick as possible because that was my fire. That was my desire. That's what I wanted to do. That level may be different for you. Do what's comfortable for you. But if you're sitting there and maybe you've got some extra time in your hands and you're trying to wind it down at the end of the night for an hour, go to YouTube. There's so many free things out there, and just continue to knowledge up. I don't care if you're me. I don't care if you're brand new. I don't care if you're a Harvey Specter. It doesn't matter. We all try to knowledge up every day. We all can be better. We can all be more streamlined. You know, product, people, and processes. You know, it's the three P's are extremely important. So find those processes. Find those people online. Network. Shake somebody's hand. Smile at them. Stick a business card in their hand. You're always learning. Learning your competitors. Your competitors may be your best friends. There's always ways to do better.
Continue to knowledge up, man. I love it, love it, love it. I'm telling you, that's a good one too. Okay, so you know the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. And I think what I really appreciate was a couple real strong foundational things that people need to put in their business. And they really need to have a strong foundation to really scale this up. I love the way you use the analogy of a relationship, e-commerce. And I was thinking about as you were just talking, is that really when you're new in that relationship, you're doing everything, right? You're showing up early. You got you're dressed really well. Mm-hmm. You probably comb your hair back then, you know, all those different things. You're bringing flowers. That's the way you want to approach the e-commerce business. When you start out, you really want to give it your all, your best, your best, your best all the time. And the beauty is, I think, at least my experience with this is, you eventually figure out where you want to fit in this business, what level of this business you want to give, what effort and that kind of thing. That relationship can go strong for a long, long time. It doesn't have to be, you know, it could be a marriage. I mean, if you approach it the right way, and I think the analogy is a very strong one. So give us another tip or trick that we can put into business tomorrow to help move their business past stuck.
This is huge for me. This has been really the reason for my success, is make a monthly goal. I don't care what that goal is. It could be a goal of just to have more time for your family, to have time for your, you know, your religion. Obviously, we're talking a lot about business here. So make a sales goal, make a revenue goal. This came from my corporate job, that high pressure sales stress goal, where every single month I had a new monthly goal. And at the start of the first of the month, you were back to zero. So you went from hero to zero. And as much as I hated it, as much as it pushed me to become my own boss and to never want to go back, and I will never go back, that structure, that discipline really made the success right out of the gate, month one, kicking butt, taking names, because I put a goal into place. Don't throw a dart. Look for the bullseye and go for it. Put a reasonable goal in front of yourself and go for it. So take your monthly goal. And if you're just starting out in the reseller world, it may be a little bit tough to guess what that goal is. But if you've been doing it for a few months, you can probably get a good idea of what you're going to be able to shoot for your target. We're going to be right around June here. So make your goal for June, maybe make it for July, and be prepared to set that goal a day or two before the end of the month based off of your results from the last month. Then you're going to break it down into quadrants. You got 4 weeks in a month. How do you get to that goal? Let's say it's a sales goal. Let's say it's a revenue goal. Let's say it's $10,000 in sales a month. Break that down into four. So you're trying to get to $2,500 a week. You're going to back it out. Back everything out. Break it down. How many items do you need to source based off your recent sourcing history, your knowledge level, the categories that you're engaged in? How many do you think that you can source per week at a reasonable ROI? And there's your number. Multiply that times four. Did you get to your goal? If you didn't, you need to do one of two things. You either need to knowledge up, or you need to spend more money or find more product. I'm sorry, three things. Or you need to lower your goal. So do not play darts with your goals. Know where the bullseye is at there. Go punch it right in the face. Don't sit there and just close your eyes and randomly throw a dart and hope you hit that 10,000 a month. Hope ain't going to get you there. Put it on paper. Make a goal. Because when you're getting around the 18th to 19th of the month, particularly with things like Amazon FBA, where there may be a delay or a lag time when you're, okay, great, you found 80 items today, great. You still got to pack, process, ship them, get them in the mail. God only knows where Amazon's going to send it. They may send it out from Dallas to Tennessee after that, it may take you 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days before it actually checks in and gets up to speed. So if you're keeping an eye on your sales week one, week two, you should be within the ballpark. And I know there's a lot of variables. Sometimes shipments get checked in late, but you should have a good idea coming down the stretch towards that monthly goal. If you need to put the foot on the gas around the 18th of the month, you need to do what you got to do. I don't miss my goals, Stephen. I don't miss them. Why? Because if I know I'm going to fall a little bit short based on my projections around the 18th or 19th, I'm sourcing my butt off the 19th, 20th, 21st, shop, ship on the same day. I'm getting it in the pipeline. It's just like sales. It's a pipeline. You got to get it up there. You put 100 things up for sale, you're going to sell probably 50 of them. You're not going to sell one. You're not going to probably sell 100 of them. You're going to create sales, and that's going to get you to your goal. So hold yourself accountable to your goal. Get an accountability partner to help you hold yourself to your goals, and you're going to get there 95% of the time.
Wow. I had a lot of thoughts run through my mind, and it's, I think you brought it all together very clearly. And, you know, take your little goal one step further. When you were breaking it down into the number of units, I still want to go back to your method, which is I set a number of those units. So if you came up when you needed 50 units a week, I'm going to buy 40 of them today. And you go until you get to that number, and then you ship. Then you get to the next number and you ship. And if you come up short, guess what? Your number wasn't right. So you got to adjust it. I think that's a very sound, practical way for somebody to move forward. And that's the goal, is to really move forward, right? And to really figure out what's working, what's not. And I think Jason's method here that he describes is a very, very sound, and it's tweakable. You'll know it's one of those three things, right, that you have to adjust. And I think this is great, solid advice. Okay, somebody has questions. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
I keep a pretty private life, but you could get a hold of me over at on Facebook, of course, just Jason Clark. I'm in the private group, the Green Room on Facebook, and you could find me over at greenroomuniversity.com. And then finally, I do a little bit of periscoping when I have time at Vegas J, the letter J, Vegas J.
Okay, man, I appreciate you taking the time. I hope you enjoy yourself in California, your downtime. I appreciate you being patient as Bill Gates decided to add Windows 10 without my permission. I must admit, it was without my permission. I turned my back and it automatically launched again today on another computer. And I'm like, oh, hate that guy, but I love him too. So, hey, I appreciate it. I wish you nothing but success. I can't wait to see you again. I'll be in Vegas later this year. Look forward to getting together. And I just, again, thank you for everything that you're doing. And I see it out there, and I know others appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And to everybody else, there's nothing to it but to do it. No excuses. Go get it, guys. Thank you.
Told you he's a great guy. You know, think about that foundational approach again. And he's very motivating, but he's really smart about it because he's put it into practice. He's had incredible success. And again, he's giving without expectation. And guess what? He's getting the reward. Those common themes. You think back to the 98 other sellers that I've had. It's been a very common theme. They've helped a lot of people because they've been helped by a lot of people. Here it is again. They've helped a lot of people because they've been helped by a lot of people. Most people I talk with will tell me that they have gotten so much more when they started giving. That's what it is, folks. That's what it takes. So, you know, hey, episode 100 is coming up, Chris Green. I hope you stick around and listen to that one. I think the world of him, and I think he has so much. Well, he's given so much. Now it's our turn to give back. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.